looking out at the Texas toll road. 45. Colt 45.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm still talking.
Keep talking.
Talking about
all right.
It. Hey, telling the whole story. Coming at
okay.
You is Anomaly Radio. It's Psyop Radio. It's me, Mac, and Smile, Lewis, back there working on the technology.
That's right. I think I got it figured out.
Okay, it's been figured out. I'm still talking. Right. Should I stop talking?
Well,
I'll keep talking.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Mac?
Yes.
All right. You can, yeah. All right, folks. Thanks for bearing with us. This is PSYOP Radio. It's 8 minutes now after 7 p.m. on your Tuesday evening. Thanks for joining us. As always, it's a live experiment.
Yes, it's live, and it's real. And so
it's real live.
It's reality radio.
So, Mac, how are you doing?
I'm doing good tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing better now that that we can all hear each other.
Yes.
We've got some new technology in the studio tonight that's hopefully we thought was going to make things easier, but, of course, always have to iron out the kinks.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's PSYOP Radio, and we're on the air now.
Finally.
From Austin, Texas, the belly of the beast.
So, Mac, the things that pop into my mind first when it comes to PSYOP and recent current events would have to be the initials KSM.
Oh, yes. Wow.
I don't know if that's what you had in mind to talk about tonight.
Well, you know, I hardly know where to begin. But, yeah, KSM. Man, he confessed to everything except the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
Or maybe he did and I missed it. And the funny thing was that this confession was put out there, and I don't even know why they bothered, really, because I read that, and I haven't had a lot of time lately to post on my blog. Lots of things going on. I'm working on the comics project and, various things. And I read that news story and I thought, wow, there's so many sarcastic things I could say about that. But, by the time I sat down the next day to actually write something about it, the mainstream media was critiquing it in pretty much the same.
Everybody's been.
Yeah, and so I had
jokes.
Nothing new to contribute to the discussion there. And I read today that Rosie O'Donnell, of all people, was critiquing this KSM fellow's confession in pretty much the same way. And
yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell, who over the past few days has come out not as a lesbian, we already knew that, but as a 9/11 truther, something even more sinister. And this is the 1 year anniversary since Charlie Sheen came out. And the interesting thing is, so far, I haven't seen any big critiques of Rosie O'Donnell, as being crucified as a conspiracy nut.
Well, I think the only person so far has been Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. So that's another interesting development. But anyway, they got this guy that they've had down there in Guantanamo for 5 years now, and we all know what goes on. Guantanamo, waterboarding, and lots of water sports that people will make anyone confess to anything, and including a plan, he said, to bomb a building that it turned out hadn't even been built yet at the time that supposedly this plot was hashed. But the whole thing is so transparent that I wonder what possible benefit there could have been on the part of those who released this information.
Well, I think the base thing is it's just like the presumed rolling out of a captured bin Laden, mm-hmm. you know, that we've been expecting. The current administration's use of anything and everything they can to continue to hold what limited pull they have with anybody in the country at this point, the true diehard Kool-Aid drinkers who think that the Bush administration could do no wrong, or even if they're doing wrong, we have to stand behind him because, of course, he is our president, supposedly.
And some what of benefit could be in that? Because the only people that could possibly be impressed at this point with this kind of news item would be a complete moron.
some of the press, let's see, TrinaCenter.com is reporting, and I don't know if they're the only source for this. Oh, actually, no, it's a link to an ABCNews.com article. Pearl Family Doubts KSM Confession.
Mm-hmm.
The father of murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl says mm-hmm. he doesn't believe Al-Qaeda masterminded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the man who beheaded his son, despite Mohammed's confession to a U.S. military tribunal. And then, of course, you've got the Time magazine. Where is that link? Time.com. Can KSM's confession be believed? From Thursday, March 15th. And, of course, these pictures, I mean, there's the ones that you're used to seeing of KSM.
Doesn't he look to you like John Belushi?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say what so many others have said, which is he looks like that porn star,
Ron
Jeremy. but like in the cover, I think it was the – there were several – there was one other printed out that I don't have handy, but it was – it showed a young picture of him, allegedly, and I swear he didn't look anything like the pictures I've seen of him with the full beard, middle of his life, or these, you know – obviously, you know, unkempt, made to look even more unkempt pictures of him. So you've got Time magazine, you know, saying, can KSM's confession be believed? And Wired magazine has been basically covering the fact that New York Times and ABC are also doubting this confession. So you've got Wired, you know, wired right in, so to speak, to the, you know, the digital counterculture, so such as it is, with that established cyberspace.
It's such transparent propaganda that on the surface seems like just the most desperate kind of ploy to grab whatever. You know, it's like grabbing at a straw while drowning. But on the other hand, I'm wondering if this criticism that's coming from the mainstream media isn't serving some sort of psyop purpose. What do you think about that?
That the media's attention to the fact that it seems so unrealistic?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I think that's a possibility. I'm not sure exactly what ends it serves, other than you know, several PSYOP analysts have suggested that that there's a planned deconstruction of the Bush administration, that Shrubia and Cheney and the neocons are the predestined fall guys for the larger conspiracy network when the 9/11 thing unravels, which
they were programmed to self-destruct, much as Adolf Hitler was.
Sure. This is a kind of off the wall connection here, but last week on Precognitive Dissonance, which is my Thursday show with my friend and co-host Craig York, we talked about. Or I mentioned at the very end of the broadcast this really weird synchronicity that happened last week where I posted this on anomalytv.com, and it's the headline was "Early April Fool's Joke or Simple Fortean Synchronicity? Is it April 1st already? Seriously, the timing of this story seems awfully Fortean and definitely synchronistic, coming as it does 2 days before all the news wires are talking about the tortured confession, quote unquote, of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed." And that basically was anomalist.com, which is a great paranormal news headline site. Had copied a press release from Cal Korf, whose initials are KKK, who is this UFO researcher who claims all kinds of wacky connections to a Israeli-founded super-secret service anti-terrorism group. But he says that this reality TV show that's doing a series called Secret Wars based on his life is commissioned Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, in quotes, Gulf millionaire playboy Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, to investigate UFO researcher Kevin Randall. And this press release came out on like the 13th, 2 days before all the press wires went crazy with the news of KSM's confession. So I just thought that was a really weird aside. If there's a psyop there, I don't really know where to begin. But
I know, yeah. Well, I remember that about a year ago, after Charlie Sheen went public on the Alex Jones show about his own personal suspicions about 9/11 possibly being an inside job, Webster Tarpley got some attention in the mainstream that he hadn't ever before that point. But he was interviewed also on numerous alternative media programs, including Alex Jones' show. And he said something that I recall to this effect, that there is some sort of rift in the New World Order. And as we discussed in, I think, the past couple of shows, the Bush regime represents a rogue element of the New World Order, and they are viewed by the others as being dangerous and out of control, and that they're allowing the coverage. At that time, CNN had Alex Jones on one of its nighttime, you know, primetime programs. True, it was an
entertainment
program, but it was primetime, and, well, probably got more viewers because of that, because it was entertainment rather than a supposedly hard news program. And that this being allowed to happen was, in Tarpley's view, he stated on Alex's show, was possibly a warning shot to show them, meaning this rogue element, the Bush regime, to show them what could happen to them if they weren't careful and didn't get back in line. So there's always that possibility that there is some factional fighting here, and now it's a year later, and we've seen that matters have escalated to the point to where now, 1 year later, this Rosie O'Donnell can go on
The View,
and attack the Bush regime in the same way, and the only commentator out there to differ with her and to raise the cry conspiracy nut is Rush Limbaugh.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe it's just a matter of time. Maybe this weekend it'll break through. I find it interesting that, you know, Okay. Remember, the South Park did their 9/11 conspiracy theorist bashing episode. And, you know, there was obviously there was a lot of discussion in the 9/11 movement about, well, maybe it was veiled, you know, attempt at getting information out in the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though they were basically saying 80%+ of Americans are retards, and that's why 80%+ of Americans believe 9/11 was an inside job, maybe that they were... I mean, they did get the 911truth.org name out there, and certainly there's tons of people probably who were watching it who had never thought about any of this, or if they did, you know.
And you plant the seed of it out there in the context of a cartoon program.
But I think it's interesting, okay, you know, first of all, again, South Park have done several episodes where, or at least one major episode where they ridicule Rosie O'Donnell for the usual reasons. And of course they've ridiculed Barbra Streisand, and it was Barbra Streisand's husband who first kind of got noticed in the 9/11 Truth movement when he on The View started giving out 9/11 Truth websites, 911weknow.com, I think.
And there was a also on The View about 2 months ago, this John Connor.
Oh yeah,
was
the Resistance Manifesto
endorsement? Yeah.
Well, and I mean the fact that Rosie has on that show, you know, done the mantra 9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I know you occasionally read Jeff Wells's blog, Rigorous Intuition. He just posted a brand new article today that I, as usual, found rather interesting. It's basically his continued criticism of the 9/11 Truth movement, focusing on the mantra of controlled demolition. And I've always kind of myself, as much as, you know, like everybody else looking at it, I go, wow, that just looks... Something doesn't look right about that whole implosion. And
On the very day it happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Suspicious from the very beginning. His new post is called "It's the Real Thing," and of course he's got a picture of a Coca-Cola truck prop that's under dust covered and sitting beneath some of the side panels from the World Trade Center from Ground Zero. And again, he's harping on the 9/11 Truth movement in its current incarnation, being so focused on the controlled demolition angle, whether it's World Trade Center 7 or 1 and 2. And he kind of does a flashback to 2004 when John Judge's 9/11 Citizens Watch group did their, I don't think it was their grand jury thing, but they did a conference that you can find the videos online. Jeff Wells' blog that I'm talking about is, you can Google or your favorite other search engine that's not CIA-powered, Rigorous Intuition, and the website is Rigint, R-I-G-I-N-T, .blogspot.com, and the current one is at the top there, of course, current blog entry that I'm talking about. And he points out that the 9/11, the 2004 9/11 Citizens Commission, that's what it was called, that John Judge and others organized, that featured Peter Dale Scott and Michael Springman from the former State Department diplomat, and Indira Singh, who's the woman who, has gone public about her working for PTEC and their weird connections to some of the stuff, as well as Paul Thompson, the guy who's done the comprehensive 9/11 timeline. But Jeff's point is that this conference, you know, has got all these great, you know, bits about the true heart of parapolitics and their and the connection between drugs and extremist groups and the CIA and these power elites that were featured as and talked about in their connection to 9/11 at this conference in 2004, and yet now, and he's pointing out that nowhere in there did they really talk about controlled demolition. They weren't really going for that kind of a approach at all. And I think, in a positive way, you know, the 9/11 Truth movement has used the new tools of technology to our benefit. You know, the fact that you can walk up to somebody with an iPod that's got a video screen and show them World Trade Center 7, and they might go, that happened on 9/11. I didn't know about that. That's really weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really took this technology back to the people, but yet it's focusing on that one aspect that, you know, however much you or I might think that that is an important and integral part of understanding the op of 9/11, there's really better stuff there that might be do better in a court of law.
You know, about 3 years ago, when I co-edited that book, The Bush Junta, and also contributed a piece to it, which was titled September 11th. The information about Building 7, about the time I was inking the last page of that piece, that information was just coming out. But I didn't need it because there was so much else it's just like you don't even really need, if you're going to study the Kennedy assassination, you don't even need to tear apart the magic bullet theory. You don't really even need the Zapruder film.
Well,
there is so much else.
That's so perfect that you would say that, Mac, because the other thing that Jeff says in this article is that basically the whole back into the left mantra is irrelevant to the Kennedy assassination. What good did that obviousness that, you know, appeals to the common man, what did that do to help, you know, people understand the links to the mafia and the CIA and, you know, the oil industrialists who were largely intertwined in that op?
The realities about who Oswald was and who he was connected to is a perfect analogy to who Bin Laden was or is or whatever, and his, or the family Bin Laden and its connections to the Bush family. That really right there tells you everything you need to know, especially when you consider the memo that went out to the FBI from the Bush administration to back off investigations into the connections between the Bush and the Bin Laden families. And then there's the foreknowledge and all the rest. And those things cannot be disputed. You know, forensic evidence, as much as it may seem to be so airtight and scientific, really, that's the thing that very often turns out to be turned to the advantage of the cover-up, because they can dispute it with a computer scenarios that, you know, computer-generated scenarios that show how it is possible that one bullet could have done all the damage that it did on in Dealey Plaza, and they can dispute with all this scientific sounding minutiae, you know, all this about Building 7 and so forth. But it's the connections that go beyond coincidence that really are the strongest arguments for a conspiracy in these and other matters.
Well, you mentioned Bin Laden, Mr. Osama.
Yeah, what happened to him? Now suddenly everything is this KSM fellow.
Yeah, the mastermind.
Yeah.
One of the things that Jeff Wells, again, made me aware of is this taking the fat out of the Fat Bin Laden Confession video from MuckrakerReport.com, where this is dated March 7, 2007, and it's really interesting here because, you know, of course, many people in the 9/11 Truth Movement harp about the this Fat Bin Laden tape that where he confesses, and everybody says, oh, that guy's so big, he couldn't be the Bin Laden that we know and don't love. And this researcher basically suggests that the Fat Bin Laden effect is, in fact, a video artifact of, you know, the conversion or lack thereof between PAL and NTSC video. For those that don't know, there's two major types of video formatting that are, one's used here in the United States and another is used in Britain and other parts of the world, and one is called PAL and the other is called NTSC. And it's basically, it has to do with an aspect ratio. If you're familiar with the difference between watching movies that have been formatted for your television versus movies that have been presented in their original aspect ratio, you know that sometimes you see a movie on TV and it looks all squashed up or squished out. Well, this guy is suggesting, and he makes a fairly convincing argument, that that video is actually of Bin Laden, and that it's the difference in his thinness and proportions has more to do with this this artifact. But the point that Jeff Wells and others have made is, and actually I think this is an article about this most salient, more salient point, has been on 911truth.org, February 26, 2007, writer claims Bin Laden offers evidence of criminal conspiracy to go to war on part of U.S. and Britain and possible foreknowledge of the 9/11 attacks. This is by author Brian Sachs, S-A-C-K-S, and he's saying that, yeah, the fat Bin Laden tape is important because it shows that our government had this footage of him. It's important, the origins of the footage is what's important, and that's what's being missed by most of the 9/11 truthers who are just pointing to that tape as saying, oh, that's proof that, you know, that's not, that Bin Laden didn't confess to 9/11 because that video isn't of Bin Laden, because see how fat he is, it couldn't be him. Whereas this other guy at Muckraker Report is saying, no, that's him, but what's really important, as Brian Sachs is saying, is that how did the U.S. government or the British government come into possession of this video, and that may in fact prove foreknowledge and manipulation on their part. So that's another example of kind of what we're saying, misdirection, perhaps, like we were saying about the whole world, the controlled demolition angle versus all the other parapolitical evidence that suggests shenanigans on the part of this.
And the fact that anything that is put out there as being scientific proof of a conspiracy, someone can always argue with. The discussion wandered off at some point there to the Kennedy assassination. And isn't it funny how that issue never quite leaves the headlines? There's a story that I read today in the news that E. Howard Hunt, who the Watergate burglar, the former CIA station chief in Mexico City, etc., who died at the advanced age of 88 or something, his son is writing a book that will detail how his father described to him that the JFK assassination did indeed involve the CIA, now rogue elements of the CIA. But Hunt told his son, and this is what his son is saying, that he was approached by the plotters of JFK's assassination to be involved in the plot. And he declined, supposedly. His son also, though, says that his father was, he was a spy. And it was possible that he was putting out multiple stories. He says in this very interesting news story that he was asked by his father to help to give him an alibi, to back up his alibi for where he was on that day, November 22nd, 1963.
Now, could you, for our listeners, I remember you were the one who brought to my attention that E. Howard Hunt was convicted in a civil trial related to the JFK assassination?
Well, not convicted. What happened was he filed suit against the Liberty Lobby, which at that time was publishing newspaper, The Spotlight, a now defunct paper, but it's been since replaced by the American Free Press. And The Spotlight had published a story, I think it was by Fletcher Prouty, that implicated Hunt in the Kennedy assassination. And so Hunt filed a lawsuit. Well, the Liberty Lobby hired Mark Lane, no less than Mark Lane, the one of the pioneering Warren Commission critics, as its defense attorney. And in his book, Mark Lane's book, Plausible Denial, he gives his account of what happened at that trial, which was at the time, I think this was in the early, mid-80s, somewhere there, and it was underreported in the mainstream media. And he brings out all this stuff in the trial that implicates Hunt to a great degree. And the jury basically found in favor of the defendant. And in effect, validated the article.
Okay.
You see? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for reiterating that. That's fascinating. Last, I think it was during our last show, we talked about a weird connection that you mentioned that I wasn't aware of between Ian Fleming and Howard Hunt.
Not with Hunt specifically, but you know, consider that E. Howard Hunt was a spy novelist, like Ian
That's
Fleming,
right.
And both of them were real spies. But there was a story which I came across in a book called Hollywood versus the Martians. Have it at hand, and I can't.
I have a copy of that in the Anomaly Archives. I'll have to dig that up.
Yeah, I can't think off the top of my head who the author was. It's a fascinating book that gets into, just to make a very long story short, it gets into the possibility that the military-industrial complex was funding a lot of the science fiction and spy novels of the 50s and 60s in order to put out this information. And there's an entire chapter devoted to Ian Fleming. And there are some interesting stories there that they aren't really backed up with any real evidence. So with that caveat, you know. But there's an interesting story there that Fleming, who died not too long after JFK was killed. Fleming died in early or mid-64, just about the time that the James Bond movie craze was beginning. And it's interesting, just as a side note here, that Ian Fleming was a friend of John F. Kennedy's, and that Kennedy was a big fan of the James Bond novels. And so, too, was Lee Harvey Oswald. There was some attention given in the both of the official investigations of the Kennedy assassination into the books that Oswald checked out from the New Orleans Library the summer before Kennedy was killed, and James Bond novels were high on his list. But the story that's there, and this is one of those take-it-for-what-it's-worth stories, is that Fleming, after Kennedy was killed, was planning to write a James Bond novel that would be based on the Kennedy assassination and would convey some information, and that when he died, before he left his home in Jamaica, he was going to fly to New York, and he never made it to meet somebody to discuss this information.
Let me guess, plane crash, is it?
Well, it was a heart attack,
which,
you know, is possible. He was late 50s, early 60s, and a heavy drinker, and a smoker, you know, so that's possible. But at the same time, you know, if there's any basis to this at all, such deaths can be faked. So that's the story. And, again, I don't know that there's anything to back that up, but it's just one of those for what it's worth kinds of stories.
I bring up Ian Fleming because of we've mentioned on previous shows where Ian Fleming got the name for James Bond was from a burger, a famous birder, yeah. Had a birding guide. And there's a quote from Ian Fleming's Goldfinger. Once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. Mm-hmm. And I was reminded of this recently by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who has an interest in parapolitics and the conjunction of the two. He's really legitimately interested in a biological perspective in cryptozoology, but he's been one of the few who's ever reported on Texas oil man Tom Slick's alleged connections or probable connections to the CIA and how he used his Himalayan Yeti expedition probably as a cover for spying on the communists. Now, a few days ago, on the 17th, Lauren Coleman wrote a blog entry at his website, one of his websites, his communal blog with Texas Bigfoot researcher Craig Woolheater, cryptomundo.com, and the title is Oil, Slick, Yeti, CIA, and Iraq. Hmm. And it's a really nice little article, and he basically talks about... now, Lauren Coleman's also an expert on the copycat effect, otherwise known as the Werther effect, and what he describes as twilight language that is often used to communicate ritualistic dates associated with certain types of violent acts and whatnot. And in the Fortean world, the strange phenomena world, there are these weird connections between dates and names and places and place names and... So he's commenting on the date March 17th, this is a quote, the date March 17th keeps surfacing in an almost ritualistic way as a chosen date for activities that have ties to oil, Tom Slick, Tibet, abominable snowmen, and more. And on St. Patrick's Day, he went into a little more detail about this. He doesn't really come to any conclusions. But he points out these connections, and he recites the things, the research that's led him to suspect that Slick was connected to CIA operations, and that includes the writings of Colonel Fletcher Prouty, I believe. Colonel Fletcher Prouty has written about this secret mission to Tibet. In 1955, Prouty was appointed the first focal point officer between the CIA and the Air Force for clandestine operations per National Security Council Directive 5412. He was briefing officer for the Secretary of Defense 1960-61 and for the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Prouty, in his 1973 book about the CIA secret team, writes, "This fantastic escape," and he's referring to the spiriting away of... Oh, well, it says this here, I'm sorry. "This fantastic escape and its major significance have been buried in the lore of the CIA as one of those successes that are not talked about. The Dalai Lama would have never been saved without the CIA." And on March 17, 1959, three groups, the Dalai Lama, his immediate family, and senior advisors escaped from Lhasa, Tibet. John Prados, writing in The President's Secret War, CIA and Pentagon Covert Operations Since World War II, which I have a copy of, notes, "Tenzin Gyatso, the Dalai Lama, was disguised as a common soldier of the Guard. The best information about the fleeing Dalai Lama came from the CIA. The CIA was so well informed because it had furnished an American radio operator who traveled with the Dalai Lama's party. There may have been other CIA agents with the party as well." And these individuals basically were part of Tom Slick's expedition to the Himalayas. So, and he also shows a clipping from the April 27, 1957 article in the New York Times that claimed that Tom Slick was behind an effort to subvert the Chinese and free Tibet.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sure is interesting.
It's very interesting.
I've always thought there was something strange about the Dalai Lama. but a CIA connection. But that's really fascinating.
I thought so.
Yeah. It's very plausible, too.
Oh, you know what? I did a Google News search on KSM Confession, And I hadn't scrolled down very far on the page, but sure enough, there's a picture of Rosie O'Donnell joins 9/11 conspiracy crowd from the National Ledger in Arizona. Mm. I'm not sure if this is if the National Ledger is a traditional online newspaper or another alternative newspaper, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And it certainly indicates a change in things, because this is a mainstream media personality. Charlie Sheen was, of course, and others come along. But this is someone who's got a network show and who's talking about this stuff on the show. I don't know about 9/11 specifically. I think she was talking about that on her blog.
Well, but as we said, she did, do the 9/11 inside job mantra while on her
that way. Was, yeah, and she didn't say it in an ironic way. And so that was, at that time, it really caused me to do a double take. And here's something else. Getting back to JFK, did you see the story this past week that a FBI report has been released that shows that the FBI believed that Marilyn Monroe was murdered?
No, I did not see that.
Yeah. And that the Kennedys were behind her murder.
No.
Now, that's the
kidding.
Fishy part about that to me, because you know, that's been one of the theories about Marilyn Monroe, that, well, she was, I mean, it's really, I believe, pretty much established or obvious to anyone who really studies her death that it probably was not suicide. There were some very strange things going on that night as to when the ambulance was called, and it was hours after she supposedly had actually died. There's lots of strange things. And then Peter Lawford, years after she died, said to his wife before he died that he was involved in some sort of a cover-up there that night. But it all comes down to this. The story has been put out there for some time now that Marilyn Monroe was having an affair with Bobby Kennedy. And she expected him to divorce his wife and marry her, and he wouldn't. I mean, that would have been political suicide.
Yeah.
It might have been a lot of fun. Fine, but and then she supposedly, you know, threatened that all these things he had been telling her about the plots against Castro and so forth, she had been writing down in a diary. She was going to hold a press conference and go public with it.
Oh, my God.
It was going to ruin the Kennedys and so forth. And
well, I found the article. Sydney Morning Herald, smh.com.au, FBI file links Kennedy to Monroe's death. For four decades, there have been rumors that Marilyn Monroe's death was not a simple suicide. Now, a Los Angeles-based Australian writer and director, Philip Mora. Oh, Philippe Mora? Has uncovered an FBI document that throws up a chilling new scenario. Wait a minute. So, I can't remember. I'm going to have to search online. The author's name of this article, it doesn't... I don't think it shows the author's name of the article, but the director they're mentioning, Philippe Mora, my initial reaction is, isn't that the guy who directed Communion and... I'm not sure if that's right or not. But this is this article. Bobby Kennedy's affair with the screen idol Marilyn Monroe has been documented, but a secret FBI file suggests the late U.S. Attorney General was aware of and perhaps even a participant in a plan to induce her suicide. That's crazy. No, I hadn't heard about that at all.
Yeah. This is a really complex matter.
Well, I was going to...
But
go
there's
ahead.
The other... equally plausible, and I think more plausible, theory that she was murdered by the so-called mob acting in conjunction with that same CIA renegade faction that later killed Kennedy, about a year later, in an effort to... it was done in such a way, she was murdered in such a way, as to discredit the Kennedys. And that the reason for Peter Lawford coming in there that night was to, was to remove the evidence, supposedly this infamous journal of Marilyn Monroe's, in order for this blackmail plot not to come to fruition. And Sam Giancana, the Chicago mob boss, Sam Giancana's brother, in a book, I think it was called, oh boy, I've got the book, but I'm not near the shelf with that book. I think it's called Double Cross. I could be wrong. Anyway, that's the argument or the theory that he presented. This is Giancana's brother writing, and it's a story that he says was told to him by Sam Giancana. And it was about a year ago that a news story was released. Marilyn Monroe's ex-sister-in-law, this would be Joe DiMaggio's sister, came out recently, about a year ago, and said that her mother, Joe DiMaggio's mother as well, was on the phone the night that Marilyn Monroe died, and in fact was talking to Marilyn Monroe when the murderers broke into Marilyn Monroe's bedroom.
Wow.
And she heard Marilyn Monroe say who was behind her murder right before the phone went dead. And according to Joe DiMaggio's sister, June DiMaggio, I believe is her name, her mother would never, she was so terrified that she would, for the rest of her life, she would never reveal who Marilyn Monroe said was about to kill her. And Joe DiMaggio begged her many times to tell him who killed Marilyn Monroe. And she said she would not tell him because she was afraid that the knowledge was too dangerous, and she didn't want her children, Joe DiMaggio and his sister, to die. And the other interesting little thing here is that according to Joe DiMaggio's sister, Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio were about to be remarried. Now, that presents an entirely different picture of what happened, because if we're asked to believe that Marilyn Monroe was, suicidally, crazy because Bobby Kennedy wasn't going to marry her, then, that seems to be in contradiction to that. And Marilyn Monroe may have been many things, but one thing she was not was stupid. She was actually a much more intelligent person than she's been given credit for, or than her image would seem to indicate. And she had a shrewd understanding of her her standing in the world of show business and politics, and also she was had a shrewd understanding of her own career. And would she really throw away her life in some insane scenario where she's begging the Attorney General Bobby Kennedy to marry her? I don't know. I really do not think that the Kennedys were behind her murder. The FBI, there may have been a report that was done at the time in which that possibility was investigated. On the other hand, documents, government documents, are as suspicious as so-called scientific evidence.
Yeah. The conspirators do have paper shredders, and they can forge them.
Yeah, there's a story about E. Howard Hunt doing that during the Nixon administration, forging some, going in and doctoring some documents that made it seem like the Kennedys assassinated the, oh, what was his name? The, forget now, the leader of South Vietnam at the time. He was assassinated, but it was a fact that he, you know, doctored some documents to make it seem like the Kennedys were behind that. And so this sounds like possible disinformation. The question here is, why is it being released now?
You talk, going back to the Marilyn Monroe thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just to clarify, I just searched for Philippe Mora, and sure enough, he was the director of Communion, the story about, he's good friends with Whitley Strieber.
Wow.
And he directed that, as well as the Howling 2 and 3, maybe not the first one, which was, of course...
Oh, boy. Does this ever open up a whole can of worms?
And he also, one of his first films, the second film, according to this entry, was a 1973 documentary called Swastika.
Hmm.
Feature-length documentary, Knock Your Socks Off, if you're ever lucky enough to see it. Let's see. Assembled an incredible body of film footage here and let the material tell the story. No narration, something Philippe does particularly well, blah, blah, blah. He was even able to find Eva Braun's home movies of Hitler, mostly taken.
Oh, so he's the one that found... wow.
Well, this is really interesting, like you're saying. I mean, the fact that it would, that this guy... On a previous episode, you told me information about Marilyn Monroe, and we are getting close to the end here. We can go a little late since we got a late start. But in a previous episode, you mentioned the whole Frank Sinatra mafia molestation angle to Marilyn Monroe's death that I'd never heard about. Do you remember, or am I remembering that right?
Molestation?
Like that she was drugged and molested while at a cabin, and that there may have been film footage of this, and that may have led to her suicide?
I don't believe I said that, because that's new to me. Now,
okay, now this is really weird. Where am I getting this from?
I don't know. Did you dream it? that would be interesting, too.
I could have sworn that you had said that there was a story that, from some source, that Frank Sinatra and had gone on a retreat one a weekend in a lake house or something, and with Marilyn Monroe, and that supposedly she had been drugged and filmed being basically raped and by these mob guys, and that she was seen coming back, you know, totally inebriated from that jaunt. And
I haven't heard that one. I've heard all kinds of things said that Marilyn Monroe might have been what has been called in the mind control literature a presidential model, such as Kathy O'Brien, mind control sex slaves who were used by presidents and others in the elite and subjected to terrible molestations, and so forth, at Bohemian Grove and what have you. And I don't know, what to make of that in regard to Marilyn Monroe. I mean, anything is possible.
I got to figure out where the heck I heard that.
Yeah,
that's so bizarre. I could have sworn that was on the show, even, I thought.
Well, Frank Sinatra, of course, was very much a player in the this period of time that we're talking about, with JFK and Sam Giancana and so forth. And I have heard a story that Marilyn Monroe, whatever was going on at that time, it may be really impossible to ever get it. You'd have to be an insider, perhaps, and a lot of them are now dead, Sinatra, Giancana, Peter Lawford, and so forth, to really know what was going on at that time. But she was obviously in over her head in some way or other. And there is this talk that she, there was a material motive aside from her possibly, her usefulness either to blackmail the Kennedys or, are to be used in an operation that would a black ops, you know, that would implicate them in her death. But there's always been this talk of some journal she was keeping. She had knowledge of things going on, and she might have been viewed as a person who could be trusted to keep her mouth shut, a loose cannon, a weak link, someone who may have overestimated her ability to deal with some very dangerous characters, and might have actually been keeping some journal or whatever, some sort of documentation, which she thought might protect her from harm. Who knows?
Yeah.
But there's a story which I've read a few places that Frank Sinatra was very concerned for her safety, and that at some point he offered to marry her, propose to her, in order to protect her from herself and what she was getting herself into, with the idea being that if she were married to him, then they wouldn't touch her, and he might be able to control her somewhat.
Wow.
And she did not accept his proposal.
Well, and I think there's some folks that have tried to implicate him in connection to different mind control conspiracies, and I mean, and he certainly was connected to the intricacies of the release of the movie The Manchurian Candidate, which he starred
yeah.
in, or not starred in, but I guess he did star in it. He's one of the main characters,
and was instrumental in keeping it under wraps
yes.
for a number of years, but then was instrumental in its release. And the Sinatra family had something to do with allowing the remake
yes.
of The Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Now,
again, we're getting close to ending here. I just go out with it. Let's bring it back to the wackiness here. Again, you mentioned this article, this news about new documents allegedly from the FBI detailing possible connections to the to RFK, to the Marilyn Monroe suicide, and I just found the article which mentions Philippe Mora, the director who's mm-hmm. apparently got the documents and who's going to do the movie. And looking up what his connections are, of course, I immediately recognize his name, and he directed Communion with the Whitley Strieber movie. He also did this 1970s swastika documentary. And I also just discovered According to Occam's Razor from 1999, documentary that's a look at the myths and reality surrounding aliens and UFOs. So maybe we should go with Occam's Razor. The simplest explanation is usually the correct one. I don't know what the simplest explanation is, except most people would say, "Oh, she was depressed and moody, and you know, dealing with Hollywood life, and committed suicide and overdosed because she was probably."
Well, it doesn't fit the facts, but then that would take a long time to get into all the intricacies
yeah.
of that.
Absolutely. Well, and the, again, the irony here, synchronicity, is there are a small group of UFO people who think that she, Marilyn Monroe, had come into some information about UFOs, and that's why she was killed. But of course, they're gonna.
Well, if you want to use Occam's Razor, it's more likely that she had it coming about things that were going on with the mob and the CIA and the Kennedys and Castro. Something was going on there, and 1 year later, JFK was dead. Wow, the full story would be fascinating to know.
What was that?
The full story would be fascinating to know. I think that the, I don't know if it's the original district attorney, it's somewhere in one of these articles I was mentioning. There has been an effort by one or more of the persons who were involved in the original suicide verdict, you know, with regard to Marilyn Monroe, now reversing their opinion, and this is someone in his 80s, and I believe it's the district attorney at the time there in Los Angeles,
really?
Saying that, you know, it's time to exhume her body and to see if if what is discovered now is consistent with a suicide.
Wow.
Wow. And it may not be. And to get into the why and so forth would take a lot more time than we have. But it can be found on the internet.
And so can our website, psyopradio.com. And, of course, you're listening to us via Anomaly Radio Network. That's anomalyradio.com and Mac White's site.
And my site, macwhite.com, macwhite.com.
Well, everybody, thank you for listening. You've been listening to PSYOP Radio. We do this little thing every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. And I promise it'll be a little smoother next time. But thanks for tuning in. And, well, don't get conned by the PSYOP or the neocons.
That's right.
Any final words, Mac?
No, just good night and happy trail.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.